The opening bars of Gute Nacht, the first of the 24 songs that make up Schubert's great song cycle Winterreise. The singer was my guest this week, the mezzo Joyce DiDonato, and her partner at the piano was Yannick Nézet-Séguin. I'm James Jolly, and welcome to this Gramophone podcast in association with Wigmore Hall, where the music continues despite lockdown, with streamed concerts continuing until May the 10th, after which the hall's doors will be open to the public once again on May the 17th for a 25-concert anniversary festival celebrating Wigmore Hall's 120-year history. Stay with us for a full rundown of the concerts for the coming week, including performances by the 2018 Leeds International Piano Competition winner Eric Liu. Joyce DiDonato and Yannick Nézet-Séguin's new errata recording of Winterreise, made live at Carnegie Hall in 2019, is just out. And I caught up with a multi-gramophone award-winning mezzo at her home in Spain to talk about her experience with this crowning masterpiece of the song repertoire. I always feel very sorry for artists who've made a record and then nearly 2 years down the line it comes out, in the middle of which we've had a pandemic. And then I'm going to be talking to you about Winterreise and you'll think, Winterreise, yes, that was a long time ago.
Oh, that was last century, right? Yeah. And actually, we're talking about it, and the truth is, I realize I've not listened to the full recording as a whole. I did the editing, of course, but that you're stopping and starting and hearing pieces. And the truth is, because this was a live recording, we had very little to edit. We did a patching session of about an hour after everybody had cleared the hall, about an hour after we had finished the concert. And we did a few patching sessions to record a few little mistakes and things, but this was the first time there hasn't been much to edit.
So, I mean, as a cycle, you know, obviously it's very much a male-dominated performing tradition. And, you know, we know Lotte Lehmann did it, Christa Ludwig, Brigitte Fassbender, and a few others. Reading your note, it seems that the idea came from Yannick. I think, had it ever entered your mind at any stage to tackle it?
Never. In fact, it was sort of clear to me that I would probably never do it. I've done a lot of recitals and I love the recital format, but most of the time my repertoire was chanson or lieder or Spanish canciones, American repertoire. But it wasn't quite insecurity, but I had the knowledge that I wasn't quite ready for lieder, because I think it's the holy grail of the recital art form. And it requires a musical maturity, as well as the proficiency of the language, which was German. I hadn't spent as much time working on it as French and Italian. So it always felt a little bit like, oh, that's for other people, the German lieder. And so we met actually in Baden-Baden during the recording of Clemenza di Tito, Yannick and myself, and we sat down to talk repertoire. And I'd made this long list of things that I thought could work with piano and recital, but also orchestrally, so that, you know, we could just put together recital programs whenever we wanted. And he looked at me, and he's so kind, because he considered everything. And he said, okay, but I was thinking of another idea. I said, sure, maestro, what were you thinking? And he said, Winterreise. And I think I literally almost fell off the couch, because in a million years, it wasn't the title that I expected. And he also said, Joyce, he said, I hear you going into Mahler, and I think this is the door and this is the entry into that world. And, you know, sign of a good maestro. He's not afraid to try and match up artistic dreams and temperaments. And it was a big discussion, because I said, Yannick, I've never considered this. I don't think it's right for me, but I'll look at it. And I promise you, I'll only do it if I feel like it really speaks to me. And he said, absolutely, this is a piece, you have to own it. You have to be willing to take the journey with it. And so that's what I did. I spent a lot of time just sort of living with it at the piano, exploring it, and trying to find my way into it.
I've spoken to both Fassbender and Ludwig about Winterreise. Ludwig, I remember saying, was one of the greatest artistic experiences of her career doing it. And I was looking back in Gramophone to when I interviewed Fassbender, which was back in 1990. And she was in London recording it with Aribert Reimann. But they both came to it quite late in their careers. You know, obviously it's for you, it's earlier in your career. Had you ever done kind of song recitals with Yannick at the piano? Or was it more in an operatic, you know, kind of repetitor-ish sort of situation?
Never. And I think actually he at this point hadn't, or certainly since he became, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, he hadn't been at the piano much as recitals. He did that early on. And this came about because we were both named perspective artists at Carnegie Hall. And I had the idea, I said, well, we should do a joint concert. We should do a recital. And I think he was the same reaction in a way as my when he suggested Winterreise to me, because this would be his piano debut at Carnegie Hall. And I think he hadn't really put himself out as a pianist in that world yet. That has changed quickly. I see he's just dropped an album, Piano Recitals, which is fantastic. And so this was our first collaboration as pianist and singer. And it was just magical, because it's not a normal recital, right? If you take on Winterreise, it is a real partnership. I mean, more so than a typical recital. And you have to walk each step of the way together. And he is that kind of partner. He's not somebody to show up and just, you know, we can throw this together. I'm with Madame Ludwig and Fassbender because it is an artistic experience. First of all, to study it. The joy of the study of this piece is one thing. And it happens as you delve into the poetry, as you delve into the musicality of Schubert and what he laid out on the page. It's a joy to start diving into all the other interpretations and to see, you know, what different people bring to the table and how many different colors can be explored in the same text and the same notes, but it's a different universe depending on who's singing it. And as sort of gobsmacked as I was at his suggestion, now I cannot imagine my artistic life without this in it. And I know that it will be a part of my life as I go forward, no question. It's something that pulls you in and you have to continue the journey, I think.
I mean, you can see it has that magnetic power. I mean, there are something like 11 recordings of Fischer Disco. And, you know, you were saying studying different colours and different recordings. Actually, you could just study Fischer Disco's Winterreises and you'd have a kind of universe in front of you. I mean, on a purely sort of technical level, you know, you're a mezzo. It was written for a tenor, but there are versions, obviously, you know, sung often by baritones. I mean, do you opt for the sort of middle voice version and not transposed from that? I mean, what did you do?
We, you know, it was clear it should fit my voice well and in the way where I can do with the text what I want expressively. And so we combined. It's not exactly true, but I'd say the first 11 are from the medium key, and then we go into the higher key for the majority of the second half. And part of it is just the vocal fit, but it's also, we found that it sort of ups the intensity as things are going. It becomes a little bit more raw that way. I think I could sing it almost in any key, but what we really went for was the liberty of color choices.
Your sort of predecessors, you know, we've talked about Brigitte Fassbender, Christa Ludwig, they don't sort of actually attempt to, as it were, reinterpret it in the way that you do, because you kind of applied a sort of dramaturgy to it. And rather than sort of sing it, as it were, from the man's perspective, you kind of flipped it round, almost a sort of mirror image to say, actually, who is behind this song cycle? Who forced this man to, you know, emote like this? What made him leave? So, I mean, you know, where did that come from?
So this is so interesting. As I was trying to, this is a little bit sacrilegious what I will say, but, you know, what can I say? as I was trying to find my way into it, I would sit at the piano and go through it. And I was thinking, come on, Joyce, fall in love with this. It's the greatest song cycle ever written. And I know that I admire it. I was admiring it, going, this is extraordinary. But it's a different thing to admire a piece and then to be audacious enough to sing it. You have to go to a different level to perform it. And I was thinking, this is Yannick, and this is going to be Carnegie Hall. This is the pinnacle. Come on, Joyce, fall in love with this. And it just, it stayed at a distance to me for whatever reason. And at the same time, I was simultaneously working on Werther. The curtain would come down, and I'm in tears and shaking as Charlotte in Werther. And I wanted the story to continue. I would think, but what happens to Charlotte now? What does she do? Does she go home to Albert? How does she begin to contain everything that's been unleashed in her that she's finally let out? Or does she pick up? What does she do? And as I was sitting at the piano and I was about to call Yannick and say, Yannick, it's not for me. It dawned on me and the question popped into my head. I said, but what about this girl? What about her, this girl that spoke of love? You know, at that time, it's not like everybody was going around, oh my God, I love your dress, or I love this bread. It's so, you know, you don't say that without real intention and commitment. So my interpretation of that is she loved him. I don't think it was a frivolous statement. So I couldn't get out of my head, what's her story and what happened to her? I understand Winterreise is his story and it's his journey. And I'm really not trying to hijack it, anything like that. This is a masterpiece and a cycle that withstands so many different approaches and interpretations and voices. And I thought, isn't it interesting to give this a different filter or a different viewfinder? Because those of us that love the piece, I don't think very many people have pondered the question, what about her? And so I took this idea to Yannick, and to his credit, he was open to it from the start. I don't know that he was sold right at the start, but he said, I'd never thought about that. And I said, let's do this. I said, let's go really methodically through the score, you and I, and see if we hit a roadblock. See if there's a place that this concept or this idea becomes imposed. I said, if we hit something like that, it's not right. I didn't want to force this or to, you know, to really try and insist on this approach. And the opposite happened, actually. As we went through the whole piece, it felt like more and more layers were being revealed and more possibilities of what his role was at the piano. Is he the man? Is he the ghost of the man? Is he insisting that she continue to read his journal? Because my idea is that he sends his journal in the post to her after he's gone. And it kind of, I suppose it's kind of like a suicide note. She's reading his words. And so what you have is a parallel journey. His is undiluted. It's the same words. It's the same emotion. But you get her reactions. There's a lot of times that the text repeats. And that's the only time I did a kind of psychological switch. I took those for herself, where she could repeat it, to look for an answer, to try and gain deeper understanding, to enter into his psyche more, or to take it for herself. In Die Post, those outbursts of mein Herz, he says it first, and then she repeats it. And you have this sense that she's trying to dance with him. She's trying to reach him. And she's having the exclamation herself as well. And so all of these kinds of things started to percolate up, and it felt like it was coming to life very organically. And then we hit a wall for Leiermann, which I think we're not the first interpreters to ponder how to make sense of that song. It's a tricky piece.
Because, I mean, quite a lot of interpreters almost treat it not exactly a separate song, but there's that even, you know, some even go to the suggestion that the Leiermann has been there the whole time during this kind of narrative or this journey. And somehow he, as it were, steps forward and makes his presence felt. I mean, that's one, you know, that's one way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something very different about it, as you know, as you've been saying.
There's something very different. And that's the one piece we couldn't quite make sense of. And we were actually here. He came here to Spain and we were working through it. And we hit this wall with Leiermann. And I just, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. And I said, oh, Yannick, this one's hers. This idea that his journal ends with die Nebensonnen. Those are his last words. And she closes the journal. And all of a sudden, something, maybe for the first time since she's read this journal over the years, maybe this time for the first time, she has the apparition. She has the sensation. And Leiermann is hers. And so by the time you get to the last line, you old, weird old man, will you sing my song? It's this idea about, what about my story? Who will sing it? When do I get my voice? And it's in the, I'm getting chills now when I talk about it. In the performance, the live performance, the journal closes and there's this sensation of somebody's here. And she experiences this for her own. And to say that at the end, will you sing my song? It's, I don't know, it's shattering to me. Shattering, because you have this idea of the forgotten woman that has had to suffer quietly and in private and mourn the loss and grieve and deal with her anger and her resentment, I think, even at being left behind. It's pretty wild.
It wasn't just you standing at the front of the stage and Yannick behind you. I mean, you had a few props and you were in costume, so Did that help you kind of enter the world that you needed to be in for this?
It helped me, but my intention with that was just to help set the stage a bit for the audience. So they understood that we're in a really, well, in a slightly different setting than a normal Winterreise. So we would take the stage and the lights would go to dark. And I used surtitles for the performances we did. And a surtitle comes up that says, he sent me his journal in the post, dot, dot, dot. And a light comes up on a small table and there's the journal. And as I open it, the music starts and the lights come up. And that's it. That's the only setting. And I use the journal for reference. Some of it's memorized, some of it's in her heart, some of it she wants to see the handwriting on the page and to touch it almost as if he were, you know, knowing that it was his hand that wrote it. The strange sensation about performing this is he felt so present. It's as if, you know, at a funeral, if somebody reads out a letter from the deceased or you hear the words of somebody spoken, somehow their presence is even more palpable. And so he feels very present on this journey as well because of the journal.
And what sort of feedback did you get from, and did you meet members of the audience afterwards? I mean, did you have sort of contact? Because I would imagine, you know, it would have been quite a sort of intense experience for them too.
I think it brings up a lot of emotion and a lot of opinions. Winterreise is such a prized piece and beloved, and it's not quite cult-like, but it's Winterreise is one of those pieces that people have their favorite version, and this is how it goes. And I respect that. I mean, when you have masterpieces sung by titanic artists, of course, there's that. And I want to be respectful of that. But at the same time, because they love it so much, I wanted to give them an option to just, again, peer through a different window and examine it from a different angle. And it brought up a lot of opinions in people. It shook a lot of people because they hadn't considered this as a possibility. And my experience, especially at Carnegie Hall, was that they went with me hook, line, and sinker, and they took the journey with me, and they allowed it to be what it was instead of demanding it be what it should be. I feel that came because I've built a trust with my audience over the years that they know I'm not going to do anything superfluous or gimmicky or for shock value. I mean, I try to really consider what I'm doing. And I felt like because I'd earned their trust, they went with me on this journey. But they also, they're still discussing it to this day. I mean, a lot of people will jump online and they have a lot of opinions. And I think that's good. We should be discussing this piece. Why? Why can't it be from her point of view? Ah, because it's not written that way.
One of the great things about Winterreise, which means that, you know, it gives something different every time, is that actually in narrative terms, there's not a lot to go on. You know, it's all quite nebulous, you know, which makes it wonderfully malleable for different interpreters, you know. You know, there's an arch to it, and you can sort of tell the story in about one sentence. But actually, as you pass through it, it's very difficult to say exactly what's happening, which is part of its amazing strength. But I mean, from an interpreter's point of view, it must be quite exhausting because there's not a lot of sort of light and shade. You know, you don't suddenly have, right, let's kick back for this one. You know, we can kind of have a little bit of a laugh and go on. I mean, it's all done in shades of kind of grey and, you know, glimpses of sort of bright light but seen through sort of cloud. You know, it's a very distinct world.
You're so, also because every song is so perfect and every song is its own universe. The only way to perform this is to be completely present and in every word and every note. And so you give everything to this song. And then the page turns and you think, oh, Rast. Oh, now this one. And it just pulls you and each one sinks a little deeper into the winter. And you just think, I don't have the strength to go on. And it really literally takes you on the journey of the wanderer. And it is exhausting because it's so comprehensive. It's so concrete within each song, what the emotional arc is. And yet, as you say, it feels like it's this kind of, not quite a bland canvas, but it's this winter landscape where you're not sure where the sky starts and the horizon ends. And you sort of know where you are, but then you've lost your way. It's just incredible. And every single time it reveals itself in a different way to you. And it also pulls you. That first chord and the first steps of Gute Nacht start, and it pulls you in and you can't stop. And in a strange way, it determines where it's going to go in that afternoon or in that evening performance. It takes you by surprise. I've had feelings of anger rise up in different places. And all of a sudden, you know, one song that was all loving and desperate became very resentful on this path. And it wasn't because I intended that. It's because that's where the cycle was taking us in that performance. And I've never felt anything quite like that in other works.
I mean, have you yet thought about, you know, popping it back into your schedule or you resting it for
scheduled.
A bit?
No, it's scheduled. Yeah, and I'll put it in wherever I can. And part of me is saying, no, not after this. Like, for example, Yannick and I are scheduled to do it in Baden-Baden in June. And I'm doing it with Maxim Emelyanchev in Vienna after as well. And that's this summer. And I think, oh, no, Joyce, what are you doing? This is not the time for Winterreise. And yet, you know, it's about looking about where we are. And I think as bleak as it is on the one hand, it's also deeply comforting because there's comfort in knowing I'm not the first human being to experience desolation and despair. This is a feeling other people have known and expressed. And so if other people understand it. Maybe I'm not alone. And I think that's a worthwhile thing to explore right now. And it's worthwhile as an artist to explore what it is to meet this piece post, or almost post pandemic, as opposed to when we recorded this, COVID, no, we hadn't heard that word before. It didn't exist. More or less.
I mean, so. It's interesting. You're doing it with Maxim Emelianichev as well, because you know, if you look back through the catalogue of recordings of Winterreise, it's amazing how many pianists who aren't 100% accompanists are sort of coaxed out by Winterreise. Lots of conductors have kind of brushed up their keyboard work and done it, or concert pianists, because it just has, as we were saying earlier, it's just got that magnetism about it. You know, they can't resist.
It's true. I mean, I think any really profound musician is pulled to this because there's, it's a holy grail type of piece. It's not a piece that you ever... No, you never arrive at it. And because of that elusive quality, that quality to pull you and seduce you in a way, I think that's very seductive to a conductor, because it's not Beethoven, you know, it's not, we know how this goes. There's a lot of searching involved in it. And that's exciting to, I think, to musicians of a certain caliber.
Closing bars of Der Leiermann, the last song in Schubert's Winterreise. The singer was my guest, the mezzo Joyce DiDonato, and the pianist Yannick Nézet-Séguin. Their live recording is just out from Erato. Gramophone podcasts are given in association with Wigamore Hall, where the music plays on despite lockdown, with streamed concerts that are available to watch for at least 30 days. Monday, April the 26th, sees two concerts at 1 o'clock, lunchtime. The 2018 Leeds winner, Eric Liu, plays Mozart's B-flat piano sonata, Kirchhoff 333, Schubert's in A minor, Deutsch 784, and Chopin's Andante Spianato e Grande Polonaise Brillante. In the evening at 7:30, the recorder player Tabea Debus, lutenist Elizabeth Kenny, and gamba player Jonathan Rees give a programme called Earworm, music from 17th and 18th century Europe, interspersed with some contemporary works that testify to the earworm's secured place in modern life. On Tuesday evening, the Gramophone Award-winning Nash Ensemble, conducted by Geoffrey Patterson and joined by the soprano Claire Booth, give a programme of music by living British composers Simon Holt, Sir Harrison Birtwistle, Julian Anderson, Colin Matthews and Mark Anthony Turnage. And on Wednesday evening, the pianist Mishka Rushdie-Mohmann plays a programme built around Janáček's In the Mists, and taking in Rameau, Mendelssohn, Chopin, Schumann and Ravel, two of his miroirs. For more information and to watch these concerts, just go to wigmore-hall.org.uk, where you'll find a host of archived concerts too. Gramophone podcasts are free, but if you enjoy them, then a really great way to support our work is to take out a subscription to Gramophone magazine, which is packed full of expert reviews and in-depth articles about the latest classical music releases every month. And if you head over to gramophone.co.uk/subscribe and enter the code PODCAST20 in the checkout, you can even get a 20% discount off any subscription package. We really value your support, and look out for another Gramophone podcast very soon.